There's a system called the reticular activating system that is like the algorithm. So if you decide, I love a red truck because no one has a red truck. Now all of a sudden you see red trucks everywhere. But there's also neurological research and evidence that if your message takes too much energy to process, the brain's going to say nope and move on. Because it wants something that will conserve energy. That's why this idea of simplicity is not only better for connection, it's our brain pays more attention to it as well. In fact, some neurological studies have shown like an 18% higher ROI and conversion rate on ads with a very simple image and fewer words. And they're measuring the EEG response of the brain to this.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Sally Mildren. Like children, not Mildred. Let's clear that up, all right? From here on out, everybody get it right or just don't speak her name at all. Not like Voldemort or anything. She is the founder and CEO of Commonwell Marketing, a fellow marketer. Love it.
Yes.
A heart-centered marketing and leadership firm that serves nonprofits, healthcare organizations, and mission-driven brands. Yep. She is a former brain injury rehabilitation therapist, which is phenomenal in and of itself. And she has turned that into being an executive leader and marketer. Sally brings a rare blend of art and science to her work, applying the neuroscience of belonging, trust, and human connection to marketing, communications, and leadership strategy. Welcome to the show, Sally.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's fun to be here.
It is going to be an exciting conversation. We've already had a couple, and I have no reason to believe this will be any different. Tell me today, Sally, what is on your mind?
I think lately the main thing on my mind is how important marketing is now than it's been in a long time. We know we say that a lot, the COVID thing, all that, but things are challenging and we're all feeling it. And there needs to be the resistance to want to hunker, to wait it out and see what happens and see how it settles out. But I really feel like this is the time not to shrink. And that doesn't mean to yell. Let me clarify.
I was getting ready.
But the key is to be more relevant and focused than ever. And I feel like that's a challenge before every single business, not just marketers, but every business. Be relevant. Do not disappear in this weird chaos we find ourselves in.
Yeah, the sound advice. And to some extent, this has been advice throughout the last several decades, but I think it's taken on new meaning, what it means to not disappear, to not shrink back, to make your point of view heard or present your value clearly. I mean, you know, especially if you think about nonprofits, healthcare, and mission-driven brands, oftentimes what I find when I work with those types of organizations is they think that either the passion by itself or just the nobility of their cause is enough to draw people in, to draw donors in, to get into news outlets, to get in front of the people that could partner with them and really blow the whole thing nationwide, worldwide, whatever their ambitions and their vision states. So what does it mean now, given, and I know everything, I feel like everything could filter back to AI, and I certainly want to bring that into the mix because I think AI has enabled a flood of noise in the marketplace unlike anything we have ever seen before.
100%.
So what does it mean to be heard, not to yell, but to speak clearly and be signal amongst the noise in today's time?
I think the hardest thing to do is to simplify. To be easier to understand is some of the hardest work of all. Especially with nonprofits and healthcare, they want to It's like if you've ever been at an outreach, like a community mm-hmm. outreach thing where there's all these mm-hmm. booths or a conference hall, and a poor, warm soul comes toward your table and they get every detail about you word vomited at them, and they just are politely taking it, looking for an escape. I feel like we do that in heart-centered brands where we try to tell them everything they need to know or that we think they need to know about us. And yet the real challenge is seeing that human in front of you and having mm-hmm. one message that resonates with that human. And that's what I believe personalization and marketing means. It's not, oh, I say your name. Hi, Sally. Oh, it's good to see you, Sally. Sally, thanks for visiting. That's not personalization. What I'm looking for is you see me as a woman and my needs and what I'm looking for, and you can connect to me meaningfully that way. And that is honestly really hard to do, to force yourself to be simpler. And I think that's the challenge in this time. If you have less to say, mm-hmm. simply for a specific audience, that will be what stands out in today's world. And you're right about AI. It's just more of the same, but AI driven.
Yeah, this takes me back to running my own marketing agency, especially when it came time to talk about either a rebuild or a fresh build of somebody's website. Mm-hmm. And they would go, I just want something simple, like Apple's website. I'm like, okay, what's your budget? $500. And I'm mm-hmm. like, nah. But people would conflate simple with easy.
Right.
And to be honest, having a really ugly website is easy. Yeah. Having a very complex and busy website or any form of marketing collateral, because it takes no thought to just slap everything you've ever thought about your topic into one blog post or a LinkedIn post or one video or every page of your website. And I'm like, I'd go cross-eyed after a little while. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a piece that a lot of people, I honestly don't know if they don't get it or if it's they don't know where to start, or mm-hmm. they're just wanting to live in la-la land and believe that, oh, well, simple is easy, but it's also dumbing down. And I'm wondering if you can talk to that, because I think when a lot of people are going to hear you say, you got to simplify, and that's what we got to do, I think a lot of people are going to say, you got to dumb down what you're doing. You got to lessen it. You got to minimize it. But I don't hear that in what you're saying. So mm-hmm. can you crack that open a bit?
Sure. I don't think there's a lack of attention, which is countercultural to what people are saying. I think there is more intentionality about what people want to pay attention to. And so this is where I get nerdy. In the brain, our brain responds to simple images, to fewer words. Yesterday, I was at a trade show or an expo, and the guy across from me literally had 8 stand-up banners covered in text. And he stood in front of them with a clipboard, and it was, people couldn't run fast enough, but our brain can't process that much. And so I feel like whether it's a message at church, whether it's a blog post, a social post, a graphic mm-hmm. for your website or an ad, we have to come in with, I'm talking to this audience, and this is the one thing they need to know now. They'll come back if they like it and want more. And that is really, it is hard to do, but it's not, I don't think you're not intelligent. I think mm-hmm. you're too busy. You're not going to respond to a message that says, hey, we do healthcare for any man age 12 to 80 with any condition for any stage of life. You're going to be like, peace.
It's like, yeah, broadly fit in there, but yeah, you're
like
going to miss
advertising
some
to the human race. There's just no way to identify yourself in there. And I think there's a little bit of fear if we narrow, we'll leave people out. But you don't have to, you still can serve everybody. But if you're paying marketing dollars, especially, you should narrow. You can speak widely to all of humankind somewhere else. But in a paid investment, it needs to have a face and a specific message you want to get to them.
Yeah. I really like what you said about I'm simplifying not because I think you're dumb, right, but because I know you're busy. And I haven't heard people, I've known stuff like that before just with my marketing background, but I don't think I've heard someone frame it quite that way. And that almost feels like it lets you off the hook from feeling like you're dumbing things down or you're being condescending to your audience. Is no, like, hey, you're busy and I respect that. And at least on a marketers, we love to talk about things being like, what's a first date? Like, you can't like give people everything right away. Or in sales, they talk about that, is you got to get like the first impression out there and then see if we can have a deeper discussion. There's chances for that, but it often comes across as a scarcity mindset. Like, I'm never going to get another chance to talk to you ever again. So I got to tell you everything and anything I can possibly think of. But that just brings us back to, if you're trying to complicate it, you're going to lose people. But if you're trying to sell and market to everyone, you're selling and marketing to no one.
Exactly. And scarcity is repelling. Regardless of how much we want to ensure you heard something in my verbal battering, it repels people because they want to go, oh my gosh. But the opposite of it is honoring the humanity of you and what you need as a customer and delivering that. And I think that's truly the human-centric way to peek at it, is that I, as a woman in my 50s, have an entirely different message and need and trust driver than an 18-year-old would. And that, when you honor me and see me as a human, even if I'm one of all the women who are 50-something, it's still, I feel seen in that, and it makes me respond to that. And that's why it's so important.
Yeah. So because I found myself, like, there's brands and things that I like, but there is something about when you see some little piece or element of you that feels really specific, right? So, like, I can look at things that are for, say, parents, and I'm like, okay, I'm a parent. And then if they talk about dads, I'm like, okay, that puts me further in a category. Dads of large families, and I'm like, okay, yeah, now we're getting closer. And then they mention, if you're foster and adoptive dad, then I'm like, okay, that is the subsection. I know that we can talk about things in a certain way that I wouldn't be able to. I'm going to maybe listen to your message a little differently than someone who's just like, hey, if you're a male who has a biological relation to a child, that it's like, man, that's so generic, like far out. Like, I've tuned down. I've got other stuff to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
I want to come back to the repelling from the scarcity piece. Is there, are there any like neuroscience, neurological reasons why we push against that or run from that when we hear it? Because I think a lot of people struggle with that. Like, they're secretly communicating how much they need you as a client or a customer. And you would think it's like, oh, they really want me. Like, but at the same time, it like pushes us away. Right. What is there anything in the brain that explains that?
Yes, our brain is designed to, it's like the algorithm, if you will. Our brain has a whole section. It's first of all, burns about 20% of the calories you consume every day just to run. Our brains are the big giant AI electricity farms. And they take a lot of power to run. And so they are designed, your brain is designed to, it couldn't possibly process every input that comes at you. So it gets really good at identifying what is important to you. And there's a system called the reticular activating system that is like the algorithm. So if you decide, I love a red truck because no one has a red truck. Now all of a sudden you see red trucks everywhere. It's because you have signaled to your brain that red trucks are important. So it's the algorithm where it is finding the things that matter to you. But there's also neurological research and evidence that if your message takes too much energy to process, the brain's going to say, nope, and move on. Because it wants something that will conserve energy. That's why this idea of simplicity is not only better for connection, it's our brain pays more attention to it as well. In fact, some neurological studies have shown like an 18% higher ROI and conversion rate on ads with a very simple image and fewer words. And they're measuring the EEG response of the brain to this. And so, frankly, if what's coming at me is just too much, your brain's like, peace, I'm going to go find something else. And it's how we're made.
That, which is really fascinating, just how it is selecting things. And it almost feels like selecting things against your will. Because maybe I'm really interested in that, but then I'm like, my brain says, I was like, why did I just lose interest in this? I don't know. Maybe it's the ADHD, but which could be it. So if I'm, I guess, whether I'm a business owner or a marketer, maybe I'm at a larger firm. So what are maybe filters, the frames, the things that would help me simplify? Because I think that this message is out there. Certainly, I think one of the biggest evangelists for simplifying messages is Donald Miller and the Story brand. That felt really repetitive. Thanks, Donald. But he's out there saying, if you confuse, you lose. You got to simplify. And I need things that help me survive and thrive. And if you don't meet that, then my brain turns off and I go the other direction. I don't disagree with them. But I think so many people go, okay, great. Yeah, let's simplify. Let's be like Apple. Let's be like Donald Miller. But what does it actually mean to simplify? Because I think it's one of the, you just say the word so many times and you're like, it loses its meaning.
Yes, it does. You're right. I think a long time ago in my career, I was talking to a chief marketing officer from Procter & Gamble, and they were over one division, dog food, I think it was. And he was saying that we aren't trying to capture the whole dog food market. We just want 1% of it. 1% was worth billions of dollars in dog food in the US. And that conversation has stuck with me in my marketing and in business, because I think we get, and again, it may be based in the scarcity idea. Mm-hmm. I think we get afraid that we have to try to reach everyone. And I think it practically breaks down to, who's the most likely to convert? Who needs my services as a marketing agency in nonprofit? It's not the muscular dystrophy and the Johns Hopkins of the world. It's the $1 to $6 million nonprofits that have a staff of five that don't have a strong marketing person or a marketing person at all. It's rural health. 54% of rural health organizations don't have a dedicated marketing person at all. That doctors and others are doing it on the side. And so that's how I've simplified, is because I've narrowed down to, I'm not going to try to get all the huge St. Jude's Hospital clients. I'm going to help this specific niche, and I want it in health and wellness. I'm not necessarily going to go do big ESG nonprofits. We really want to be in the human-centric ones. And so Humane Society is not on my list. I love dogs. I love what they do. But that's how we simplify, is by being brave enough to narrow, finding out what they need and speaking to that and trying to win that 1%, not 100%. And I feel like that is a really practical way. We just did with a rural health system some external messaging, and their messaging literally was, we serve every age and stage of life for women's health. Yay. Okay. So we changed it and made ads. Okay. In the U.S., there are 3,000 women entering menopause or perimenopause every single day. Why not have an ad toward that? You have a very big audience up through 2033, I think. There's a 14% compounded annual growth rate in this market. It is a thing, and it's a deal, and you've got the services. So let's speak to the women. We had an ad that had a gal fanning herself. We didn't have to say menopause on it. Anybody who's there knows exactly what that is. And so yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's just being really specific about who it is you want to reach and who needs you, and be willing to invest there.
That's fantastic. You said a couple of things. One, I love the ad and getting nerdy in the statistics because I love going there. But you mentioned a couple of things that I want to highlight. The 1% piece, mm-hmm, which somebody may go, what? How do I go about figuring out the 1% that I can best help? Mm-hmm. Because out of all the women ages 3 to infinity, right, at that health system, there's probably several different groups and mm-hmm clusters and conditions, yeah, for women that you could have selected. And I think someone listening may go, okay, great, Sally, but what 1% of that should I go after? Mm-hmm. And then after that, if we could talk about, you use the word bravery, and I want to maybe go and sit with that for a second. But practically speaking, how do we figure out what 1% we should even go after?
This is honestly one of the areas I definitely recommend AI. AI is brilliant at helping you find market opportunity because it can pull all the publicly available data by county, by area. You can go, you can get to, and I recommend Claude. They're the only one with a nonprofit rate. And they also have the highest safety ratings and protections of all of them. So that's my mm-hmm little plug. I get nothing for that, but
I second that.
If you go to Claude and say, okay, this rural health system serves these three counties of this state, find all the publicly available information for these five competitors. How do we compare? What do all the reviews say of why they're choosing us and why they're not choosing us? And then it starts, you can ask it to pull all the demographic data, how many household owners, how many women by gender, whatever. And it begins to paint a picture for you of a market assessment. And then you also, and it's really good at saying, what market opportunities are there for my business that serves X, has these products, and it gives you a lot of great ideas. And so honestly, it comes from being willing to do a little of that research and mm-hmm not just assuming that what you can see right here is all there is. But AI is terrific at helping you identify those little nuggets.
Yeah, because you boil it down, a lot of what AI is just like large data set pattern recognition.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that is a shortcut. So let's say I went through that. Where does bravery enter in? Because someone could be listening and say, that's a really strong word for marketing. Mm-hmm. Now, I've had my own personal experiences with this, but I'd be curious on your take and how you think and talk about bravery as it relates to not just finding the 1%, because I don't think that doing some Claude searches and things like that doesn't take a whole lot of bravery. But pushing your chips into the middle on that, I think, is where it does. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. I think it comes back to what we've been talking about, is being willing to narrow and put your investments on one audience. And that combats that fear of, if I only talk to this group of people, then no one else will know about me. And the truth is that you could have, for this health system, for instance, we do have a labor and delivery ad for them, but it's only targeting a certain age group. We have a menopause ad for them. We have a women annual checkup kind of thing for the younger girls. So there are various ads, but one marketing tactic should not be designed for all. Mm-hmm. And that's where it does take a little bravery, particularly if you've got board members or executive directors or doctors who think you need to paint with broad paintbrushes, but that is not what our brains respond to in today's world. We're overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. We're overwhelmed, and we need to see myself in your message. And when you look at any trust research for healthcare especially, the things that break trust the most across every generation is not listening to me. It's the number one thing on every generation, millennials, Gen Z, but every generation, they want to feel listened to. And that's where, if I lead forward with the hot flash looking photo, that is narrowing really small. And the execs might think that's such a waste. But if I got 1% of that $17 billion market a year, that's a lot of money. And that would save you. Yeah.
It requires a lot of, I would go with faith to do that. Because you can look at all the numbers and feel good about it, but until you actually put money behind it, it's all theory. I talk to different executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs that are like, I've got this great idea, and people are telling me it's a great idea, and I've narrowed this and done this. And I was like, I'm not here to rain on your parade, but until someone spends money with you, on this and is willing to buy it. And I actually took that lesson from Jason Fried, who is one of the co-founders of Basecamp, 37 Signals, wrote Rework and a lot of those books that were very influential to me when I was getting started with my first company. And it just, it taught me that maybe I have great ideas, but until I cross this threshold of spending money on it or extracting money, I say extracting and that sounds cold, but I mean, getting the money in exchange for services, it's all a bunch of talk and really required no bravery, no courage, no faith whatsoever. And that really is the big threshold. But I think that's where, if you get it right, that's where the money is. That's right. Where the growth comes from. That's where, if you're a nonprofit, that's where the donors are. I had a guest on, and I think his episode at the time of the recording is coming out very soon, but it's with Aaron Glaske. He's an executive director of the Victoria, Texas ISD, like Education Foundation. And one of the things he was talking about was finding donors who would contribute and partner on programs, not events.
Right.
Because then we're finding people who care deeply about the work we're doing, not just putting their name on a program ad or a table or up on a slideshow. There's nothing wrong with those things.
Right.
But when you find people who you say, this program helps these kids or these people do this thing that is extraordinarily difficult or not widely accessible or whatever your cause may be, and you invite them in and they go, oh, that really connects with us. It's not just, hey, you have money, we need money, would you give us some and feel good about yourself?
Right.
Like, you could say that's a simple message, and truth be told, it is, but it's like simple to the point of idiotic.
Right.
It's not enough. And so I see that happening and what you're saying, but also happening even in the for-profit world of, I can have great ideas, but until somebody's willing to buy the product and I show that I've listened to the market's not going to listen to me.
And I feel like that transactional world of you have money, give me money, whether that's for profit or not, the younger consumers don't resonate with that anymore.
Yeah.
They don't resonate. They are very vocal about supporting things that align with their ethics, with their passion points, and they are not in. We have a training that we do that's called Love Language of Donors, and we go through all the generations. And the boomers and the silent generation gave a lot to education, to universities, all that kind of thing. That's not the kind of world that just automatically resonates with some of these younger generations. They want things that are going to impact their local community. So to move beyond that transactional kind of relationship is really the key to long-term loyalty. You're aligning with something that's valuable and meaningful to them for whatever reason. Maybe it was they lost a child, and in that child's memory, they really have a passion or whatever. That is going to be the key to success for nonprofits and for-profit organizations. You have to, we have to know them enough to honor what they love, and not in a manipulative way, but you love this, that's what we do. We'd be perfect together. Not, just give me money.
Like, hey, I could do this thing for you. That's also a fast way to like tank your business or your nonprofit is it's like you have money and you want me to do this. So if I do this thing that isn't in my core competency or not what I stand for, but I'll get the cash for it, sure, I'll do it. That's how I see so many organizations get off track so quickly. It happens in churches too.
Yes.
So there's stories of where you have an early church plant where somebody is a large donor or tither or what have you, and suddenly they have a few requests about the sermon topics or the direction of something. And there's tons of pastors who have said, I've either had to have a hard conversation and they left the church and took their money with them, or they were deeply offended, or sadly, maybe for a time they gave in to that because they were like, what's the harm? But that sort of stuff happens in any kind of organization or entity that is seeking growth that isn't currently generating millions upon billions of dollars. It can leave you feeling like, I might have to sacrifice some things here in order to make this work. And what I hear you saying is don't do that. Don't give in to that, and really just passionately pursue the people that you want to serve, whether that's with a for-profit paid product or a non-profit service and program that benefits the community.
And I think the key is alignment more than it is talking at. And that takes a little bit of effort. AI can help you find some of those points that you align on, but truly, and I've been in a million churches where I've seen exactly what you discuss, and I feel like that is a moment of faith. We either are going to trust that God will lead us where we need to with or without this pocketbook, or not. And when we give in, truly, that's another symptom of that kind of scarcity, that if I let this go, then that's an indicator of a spot in our faith that maybe needs a little shoring up. God, if I say this, they're going to leave. It's like, but if he's asking you to say that, he's going to follow it up with the blessing. And I believe that in business too. Not everybody comes from that perspective, but it relates.
That's actually over the last 6-12 months has been a lesson I really had to learn, because I thought my hard work, my effort, my grit, my determination, my charisma, whatever I have, was what was paying the bills. And I tried to stay as authentic as possible, but would find myself sometimes editing what I said in order to get an opportunity. And it wasn't really until after the fact I go, why did I say that way? Why did I say yes to this? I didn't want to do this. This doesn't align with what I'm good at or who I want to serve, but it was a buck. It was an opportunity. It was a shot. Yeah. And really having to walk in faith that there's only a certain amount of people or type of people that I'm called to serve. And if I want to serve them powerfully, then I can't chase everything else. It's a lot like if I want to stay married,
yeah,
I can't chase every woman that runs past me. I got to stick after my wife. And thankfully, she stuck with me in the same way. We're coming up on 17 years next month by the grace of God, mostly grace for me. But I think that there's so much to keep unpacking, and I would love to. And I think that there's a lot of different avenues. You sparked a lot of thoughts for me to walk away and think about. But if there's a leader who's sitting and listening to this, or maybe they're driving, they're jogging, walking a dog, or what have you, and they go, "Okay, I hear you, Sally. We should simplify. We need to be brave in our messaging, our offering, listening to our audience, our market, our consumers, the people we want to help the most." But that can all feel real overwhelming. What's a baby step that person could take in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to start to simplify their message and be more brave with it?
I would take one social media post and pick a specific audience, not everybody. Find one audience you want to talk to and edit that message so that it speaks directly to them, and post it. That's the very first step to simplifying, is that narrow any piece that you have in front of you to one. Picture a face in front of you. If it's a church, if it's a customer, whatever, narrow one message and start there. And that is the path to begin for that audience to see you and say, "Hey, this business sees me."
Yeah.
And that is where trust is built, and that is where decisions are formed, and where loyalty comes from in the long run. So one post.
One post. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
Sally, if people want to know more about you, more about Commonwell Marketing, or maybe they just have some follow-up questions, where can they connect with you, learn more about you, and more of your approach to this heart-centered marketing?
You can find us at commonwellmarketing.com and Commonwell Marketing on all the socials. That's our handle. Easy.
Awesome. We will post all of that. And I see two quick things too that I'd love for you to talk briefly about: book and podcast that you have.
Yeah, we have a podcast called the Leadership Cafe Podcast. It's actually part of a free online community called the Leadership Cafe. It's for small businesses, nonprofits, healthcare, to have a community, a safe space to ask questions, all of that. And our podcast is experts from leadership, marketing, branding, storytelling, really great practical lessons to help shore you up as a business owner or marketer. And then a book. I wrote a book. It's little. It was like 300 pages, and I edited it down to 50 something.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot on the chopping block.
Yeah. It's called Leading Real People. It's a human-centric guide to leading people for middle managers. So it's really geared toward people new to leadership, or just you're such a great individual contributor and your reward is that you get promoted to supervisor or manager and you're like, "Oh my gosh, what do I do now?"
Yeah.
And so it's really just a very practical guide about thinking and how you approach communication, everything to help you take care of the humans. It's not an org chart. It's not a box. It's a human. So it's more the same of heart-centered.
Fantastic. And those will also, so if you're a listener, you're interested in checking those out, we'll also have those linked in the show notes wherever you consume this. So Sally, thank you so much. I love this conversation, and I hope to have another one with you in the not too distant future for the benefit of the listeners, but especially the benefit of me, if I'm being selfish and honest right now. This was really helpful for me and some things that I'm processing in my own business. But thank you so much. I appreciate you spending time with me. And to the listeners, thank you. Sally and I know that you have many choices when it comes to podcasts, and we thank you for choosing us, at least today. And we hope that if you stuck around this long, that you got several gold nuggets. Sally was throwing those out all over the place, so hopefully you picked up all of them. But if not, give it another listen. But if you are on YouTube, if you're on Spotify, if you're on Apple or whatever podcast player of choice you have, like, rate, review, subscribe. That would mean a lot to me. I love doing this, but it's for your benefit. And so your interaction with the content helps me know that things are resonating or not resonating. Leave comments. Tell me who you want to hear more of. Maybe there's a guest and you want to hear more. You thought I should have gone deeper on something Sally said. Put that in the comments. We'll bring her back and we'll just talk about that. I'm sure we'll have a blast. But it is also an easy and free way for you to positively impact other leaders just like you who are on their journey trying to take their next step and grow by interacting with the content and gets it in front of them so they can also be a part of these sort of conversations. And won't that make you feel warm and fuzzy inside? But until next time, change the way you think. You'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.